employers place some ridiculous expectation in the name of non-compete clauses, NDAs. Most times I just laugh because by our laws, most of those agreements or those clauses are not binding. They have no legal possibility. If someone has worked for you, they've left your place of employment, why are you so concerned about where they are going to work next? Some will say you will not work in this industry for the next 2-5 years. How will they survive? What if that industry is all they have known all their life? They came from somewhere to work with you. If there were such restrictions in the first place, why would they come to you? That's anti-competition. If you want to retain the best talent, you do well and retain them. You convince them to stay with you. The moment they decide to leave, you don't start reminding them of one non-compete clause that is meant to hold them down or set them back. Some will even tell you, you are not to accept any employment within a 30-kilometer radius of your former place of employment or any of their branches. So if they have branches all over Lagos, what am I supposed to do? Some of those terms are grossly unreasonable. And the moment the court sees that this thing is unreasonable, the court will strike it out. It can't stand.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often under-discussed topics within the professional world. Every week, we'll feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, trends, and best practices. Joining me today is Damnola Mumuni, an employment lawyer who runs the Dream Practice, an employment law firm. We attempt to answer some very important questions. Why do employers ignore the provisions of the labor laws that are meant to guide the employer-employee relationship? Who holds each party responsible for any form of gross disregard to these guidelines? How do employers and employees protect their rights in the workplace? When is it okay to sue? And where does the industrial court come in? Let's get into the conversation.
My name is Damilola Mumuni. I'm a legal practitioner, an author, and also a counselor for young people.
Thank you for joining me on this conversation. What we're about to discuss is very important to every going concern or business, especially in this part of the world, because it appears that not many people pay attention to this particular conversation, and that is what the law says about employer and employee relationship. So the focus is just to mention those laws or requirements or expectations from employers and employees that have been grossly disregarded, especially when it comes to the Nigerian context. A little backstory. Sometimes earlier in the year, TechPoint Africa was trying to organize a workshop to help employers to stay safe and protect themselves from the risk of getting sued or getting into lawsuits that will cost them the whole business. We discovered that not many people showed interest. From what I discussed with the facilitator, it doesn't seem like what brings direct gain or immediate gain to them. And so employers don't really care about what the law says about the way they handle people. And it is not unexpected in this part of the world where law and legal provisions are really not paid attention to. I want this conversation to be in such a way that when employers listen to it, they know where to adjust. And when employees listen to it, they know where to ask their employers how to hold them accountable. So I want us to start from the top. You know, there are some that are very obvious, some legal provisions that employers in Nigeria are ignoring.
Okay, so the very first obligation that an employer has is to provide work for the employee, because obviously the only reason why you sort out applications from people or put out a vacancy is to get people to work for you. So the moment they sign up and they start working for you, it is left for that employer to provide work for that particular employee. Now, most of the time, you have employers sidelining this responsibility and finding a way to impose it on the employee. So that's where you now see issues of target. You have to meet ridiculous targets. You have to bring 700 million naira into this company. We have to ensure we have this. No, targets with respect to employment are not mostly feasible. KPIs are different. Yeah, so I'm saying that employers generally have a duty to provide work. As long as you are bringing me in, you are providing the work I'm supposed to do. So if I come in and there is no job, it's not my problem. It's not my fault. My own is to report every day. The moment as an employee I report every day and I make myself available for work, I have fulfilled my own part. It is not left for the organization and the employer to set out the focus, the line of direction on what level of engagement that employee will be involved in. Do you get that? So you now have a situation where employees are no longer provided the work they're supposed to do. Instead, they are asked to go and source for it. So in banking industry, for instance, which is the classical example of oppression that you would have in Nigeria, and particularly when it relates to their marketer, you see them call them and say, you know what, you have to raise this amount or you'll be sacked. In fact, there's a judgment that came out from the National Industrial Court of Nigeria. I think that was some 2-4 years ago, I can't remember, but I was in court on the day the judgment was delivered against one of the old banks in Nigeria. And the court stated that it is not the duty of the employee to go around providing work for herself to do. The employer has to provide every facility, infrastructure, and the enabling environment for that employee to function. The issue of asking them to get ridiculous targets is unjustifiable, is illegal, and is unethical. So most of the times, employers just want to get into a frame of bringing in a number of heads into their operation. They now start thriving or making profit off these people without making adequate remuneration available for them. So if as a marketer, I'm asking you to bring in 700 million, for instance, 700 million should not just be you bringing it into the company or the office, and you are just going to retain your job. What are you getting in return from it, for instance? So there are no incentives attached. They just want to use these young persons to grow their industry or grow their sector without adequate compensation. So ordinarily, what the company is supposed to do in terms of marketing, business development, which ordinarily should be like normal office operations, they now outsource it to their staff, mandating them to make up for their own deficits so that the company can thrive. The company is supposed to bring in those customers, bring in those clients for the employees to work with. If they are partners, maybe we say they are different. So you also have to source, you also have to market, you also have to get on the briefs. For the employees, you do not tell a bank teller, for instance, that for you to retain your bank teller job, you have to bring in so and so. So you have a lot of people who work in the bank. Even though they work with customer care, they still have to ensure that they get customers with every account to join the bank. And there is no end to it. So on that basis, it is illegal. You can't be running that kind of operation and you expect that everything would be well in terms of our industry standard. So that is one major area where there is an issue. And the reason why it persists is because we are in Nigeria, where most times our first response to anything is tolerance, particularly because we live in a difficult society and a society where we are left with no option. Regulatory enforcement procedures are poor. Our courts or judicial system is a bit slow, and you cannot be able to predict in clear terms what are the outcome or the probability of this suit favoring you, for instance.
I love that you went that way. We were going to get there, like why there is so much gross negligence. There has to be something enabling it, and you've touched a bit on it. But before we go there, I think the first provision of labor law is to show the contract that exists between employee and employer. You're giving them something that is lining out what they are coming to do in your company, how you're going to pay them, then other provisions come after. So I know that you started with the part of telling them exactly what to do and providing all they need to do it for them to do it well. So there's one interesting one that a colleague mentioned, and I had to go and say, like, there's this recurring conversation in the Western world about the 40-hour work. Is that a thing in Nigeria?
Okay, no such rules, I would say, exist in Nigeria. The thing is, Nigeria is trying to catch up with a lot of developers. I would appreciate the fact that, like I tell people, the National Industrial Court is like our model in terms of justice delivery in Nigeria. You have a number of their judges who do not waste time. Like, that's a court in Nigeria that you can be sure that you file a matter, I mean, within 6 months or a year, from your first appearance in court, you get judgment. In fact, there are some judges that I know personally, that the moment you have served all parties, the next date for trial, you are expected to come with all your witnesses to court. Both sides, the judge hears you for that day. He gives a date for adoption of your argument, then he adjourns for judgment. So now, looking at this particular conversation that we are saying about the 40-hour work rule, principally in Nigeria, there's liberty for employee and the employer to negotiate work hours. But most times, the work hours are determined by the employer. So most times you have what we have now known as 9-to-5, or for some people, 8-to-6, 8-to-4, depending on the calculations. So looking at that calculation, that's supposed to be like an 8-hour work schedule with a tea break of maybe 30 minutes or 1 hour in between. So that is how we have decided to run it in Nigeria. either by agreement, maybe in the hold, or maybe by some level of observance or convention, and it has continued like that. I remember that while growing up, the conventional time for closing period was 4. So most parents were home around that time, but as the world evolved, it started shifting to maybe like 5 to 6, and you know, and all of that. So it just depends on the negotiated terms by both parties. So if there is a 40-hour work rule in Nigeria, for instance, it would be because maybe certain persons negotiated that for themselves. But I know that in the same provisions, you have what we call overtime, which means that even after the regular work period, employees who are interested may decide to work overtime. But in some places, it is compulsory because the company would be like, we need to ensure that we keep on working to meet our targets. So maybe they pay them for those things, or some of them might say, oh, when you are, they have provisions in their contract that say, when you are, you might be required to work extra hard. So the extra hours might come with or without pay. But really, I'm not aware that we have such established principle of the 40-hour work rule in Nigeria. And the reason would be because we do not have an established minimum wage that would pay per hour. Usually in Nigeria, we negotiate pay or compensation by wages, which might be weekly, bi-weekly, or salaries monthly, and all of that. So that's just it.
So it's usually not possible to negotiate that 40 hour if you're not paying wage per hour. So there's nothing in the law apart from the overtime that actually addresses how long an employee can work at a workplace, except in negotiation between the employer and the employee, right?
No, because the law would not be able to cover every circumstance. The law would not be able to predict what the working period would be. For instance, now, I might decide to set up a company and I decide that I need an employee for a night shift. So night shift might just be maybe 3, 4, 5 hours. So the law just provides a framework. Policies can come out, conventions can come out, agreements can come out that may now fashion, you know, or lay down the further superstructure upon which they build on the foundation. Then from there, they can begin to go. It's just like when you are building the skyscraper. The law is like the foundation. It helps you to understand that this is the way this building is supposed to go, even though you can be flexible with it. So it now depends on the parties who are involved to now decide what course they are going to follow.
So there's no breach that can happen in this aspect that can be, say, addressed by the industrial courts?
No. Except if, for instance now, if you have an agreement or some agreements might be oral. Maybe you jumped into maybe like some of these labor firms or companies where they produce maybe products and all of that. And you get in, some of them you get in, as you get in by 7 a.m., they lock the door and you keep on working till maybe it's 2, you go for your break, you return, then they lock the door and they open the door next, maybe by 7 or 8 for everyone to go home, having ended work for the day. You've agreed to it by the fact that you've continually gone to the work and you've rendered your services. You've agreed to it. The same thing for somebody who has a written contract. Your terms are stated explicitly. It is only when somebody has gone contrary to the established norms, conventions, standards, or the written agreement that there can be an issue. The moment they say, oh, this is how they do it in this company, no. You come by 7 o'clock, you don't go until it is 12 midnight, and you start work 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, even if it is 1 day, 2 days, and you are aware of the work schedule and environment. They are paying you after you work, and you collect, you go home, no official complaints, nothing. It will be seen that by the circumstance of that employment, you have accepted it. It would now be left on the party who feels aggrieved to prove the basis upon which his grievances can be settled. I'm suing or I'm going against you because you've done XYZ based on XYZ established procedure. But if there is none, the person might not have a reason to say he wants to go to court for anything.
So, avoid oral agreement. That's what I can pick from that.
Yes, as much as possible. And I tell people, if, for instance, maybe the person you are speaking to is trying to play smart and they are not trying to commit, or some people might just tell you, okay, these are your terms. They might show you the draft, but it's not signed. I always tell people, there is no harm in sending a mail to say, oh, thank you so much for the meeting today. In line with our discussions, you know, I'm supposed to this. These are the expectations from your company to myself. These are my expectations according to what we discussed. I'd like to hear from you. Either they respond or not, all of those begin to form like trove of evidence or files of what exactly was your own understanding of that transaction. If they respond to it, if they decide to rebut it, fine. If they don't, it stays where it is. At the end of the day, the court will have to decide based on everything that is presented. But it is bad enough not to have anything to present.
So what are other violations that you've noticed among employers in relation to their employees?
Thank you. Poor welfare. You know, like, welfare is the almighty formula for labor. Most times when you see employees complaining, it is most likely because of the welfare. Welfare is the total package of the labor industry. Once someone's welfare is well taken care of, you hardly see them complain. They don't mind staying at the same job for years. All they just want is to ensure that what you are giving them as compensation tallies with the prevailing environment or the prevailing condition. So most times, employers take advantage of the fact that Nigeria has an overpopulated demographics of job-seeking applicants and, you know, begin to lower the standard of workers' welfare. Previously, we've heard of instances where they say once you graduate from school, you have people who are sourcing applicants directly, you know, at university convocation ground, saying, oh, are you available to work with us? We like it. That used to be when you had firms competing because there were maybe not very, very much pool of talent as we have it now. But now you have, like, in fact, a wide pool. You have mini, you have medium, you have large, you have extra large, you have very, very, very extra large, you have a whole lot. Because by the time you begin to check it, you have those who finish with NCE, those finish with secondary school, those finish with university degree, those who went with the master's. Then you now begin to divide them according to their grade, you know, pass, whatever, and all of that. So you have a whole level of pool of talent who are desperate to get work. On that basis, they begin to lower the standards because if A is not going to accept, B is going to accept. So most times you now see organizations that do not take care of safety. Of recent, I heard, I think in this last week or so, that somebody died because an industrial machine actually maimed them. So you'll be asking yourself, why is it that such companies or factories cannot provide protective gears? Why can't they ensure that they have a safety officer and police in place to address all of those concerns? And you now also ask yourself, why is it that even the employees do not give adequate regards for their life? So some of them are only interested in their daily bread. What do I eat? They do not think of the fact that if I'm unprotected, if my welfare is not guaranteed, if I die, that is the end. I will not be able to earn a living. I will not be able to do anything. It's only when I'm alive I can be able to feed, do any other thing. Then you have a situation where a lot of companies do not even take care of the health of their staff. No HMO. Some do not even pay pension. Some do not pay taxes. Maybe when there is an issue or the employee is now looking like he's going to drag them to court, they start running up and down to regularize pension, to regularize this, to regularize that, because they know that it's an infraction. So that's the basic area where I feel that organizations are lacking. That milk of human kindness, the sympathy to pay what is appropriate and right, is a big issue for most of us. Companies or institutions that are paying well in Nigeria are institutions who still have maybe white or foreign executives. I do not want to start maybe appointing labels, but from developed climes that have, you know, policies and, you know, backings of rule of law, who know that, yes, you cannot mess with this. So those people with those experiences, people who have grown under those kind of people, will end up setting up, you know, companies that would want to replicate all of these kind of models. But most of these are steel factories, rubber producing factories that you have, or rock producing factories, or home utensils producing factories, do not give adequate care or concern to the welfare of their staff. But at the end of the day, I always tell employees, if you cannot stand it, leave. The moment we start rejecting all of these things, we will get a better welfare package for employees generally. Another part that most employers miss on would be the aspect of prompt an adequate remuneration. Now, I'll give an instance of schools. Schools, the educational sector falls into the line of areas where you also have serious violation and abuse of the rights of employees. Sometimes you have employees working throughout the month. They would not be paid their salary until the middle of the next because the school owner is insecure and does not want a situation where an employee is leaving halfway. Everybody has a right to leave, provided they follow the laid down procedure to exercise that right. You do not have a right to hold on to their salary as a way of ensuring your business from maybe having to look for a new hand. Then number two, you have a situation where, for instance, now that we are in this third term, exams might get to finish maybe middle of the month or before the end of the month. You now see the school authority prorating their salaries, calculating their salaries based on the number of days or paying them half salary for the month. That is wrong. The law does not expect or provide for such situations where you begin to ration the salary of an employee. Once an employee enters a month with you, the expectation is that they are going to end up spending that month with you. If you are going to be terminating their employment midway, you have to pay them for their initial expectation, which is for the month, and their judgments that have come to state this particular position as the law. If I'm resuming with you on the 1st, if you decide to terminate my appointment on the 1st, that's fine. You must pay me for that period that I have worked, which is the month. You see, some people will just pay maybe salary in lieu and they'll say, go. Oh, God, that's not all now. I've worked 1st, today is 2nd, today is 3rd. They say, how many days is that? I can't pay you for that. No, you have to pay because my initial expectation, you have compromised my own position. My expectation is to continue to work with you. If you have sacked me or terminated my employment at this particular time, that means you have shortened, you know, my financial capacity. You have to pay me for this month, which was my expectation. Do you get? As well as whatever other benefits that may be outstanding. One other angle where employers also forfeit is with respect to the closure of employment contract, determination. They mess it a whole lot. And that's why you see that there are a lot of cases there. And most of them, especially when you have ego issues in companies or offices, they just want to show the subordinate that have power. And you know, some of them, maybe in a one-man organization, you are fired. Pack your loads and go. No recourse. So this person has a contract. Can we look at the contract? What does the contract say? We've looked at the contract. This is what it says. But can we get a professional to help us view it and tell us exactly what it says? May, should, shall, will, all have different interpretations in the, under the law. To a layman, it looks the same thing. They say, he may, he shall. I say, we can just do anything we want. No, those terms have a reason why they are there. You now get to some point, they say, oh, this person has a right to do this, provided A, B, and C is done. You say, you have a right to do it now. That's it. No, that clause is still telling that provided a... So there is a condition precedent. So that point is the beginning of the liability for most companies. Because when they are maltreating their staff, they endure, they tolerate. You know, everyone is going, just trying to get their daily bread. But the moment you now tell them, I'm severing relationship with you, and you don't sever it very well, or you don't sever it accordingly, an employee who decide, who wakes up and decide that, yes, he knows his rights, now holds you by the wrist and begins to drag you. I'll give you an example. I had a matter in court that we filed, I think, in 2019. We got judgment in 2020. It was against a major multinational, number one multinational in, as per our local Nigerian person owning it in Nigeria. This person had applied for a job in at their head office in Lagos. Then they had seconded the person to go somewhere in Kogi State for resumption. When they got there, it was issued a letter deploying him to a particular unit. That settles it. It means that the person is ready for work. Then he got a call and he was told to submit his letter of employment and told to close for the day or go back to Lagos to arrange to some issues that are outstanding. This person leaves, and when he got to Lagos, he's not attended to. This goes on for 2 years. He's always calling, hello, what's happening? How can we do this? What do we do? I qualified now. What is that now the issue? Then he approached our office. We decided to file a case in court. For the first time in 2 years, this person was confronted with his letter of employment. All we built our case on was the fact that there was a letter of deployment given to him, which God in his own mercies has helped him to keep. If he didn't have that document, his case would have been lost. I kid you not. He got judgment for 23 months that he didn't work for because the employment was not terminated. So at that point in time, he got judgment for that. As at then, it was about 1.8 million or so, 1.850. He got judgment for 23 good months that he had gotten into the employment of the company and he was not paid anything, yet he was not sacked. The excuse was that he did not complete his medical. Out of 3 days, he completed two. He couldn't come on the other day because there was an election, local government election that was supposed to be conducted in Ogun State, and it derailed their movement. So the court held that you cannot, because of that, now come and withdraw his services without following the due process. They were even arguing that their contract said that you can fire him without notice. And I see a lot of employers. How do you fire somebody or terminate somebody without notice? No. How do they know that their appointment has been terminated in the first place if you don't notify them?
They should address this. Yeah, there's this thing about around at-will employment. What does that mean? What does at-will employment mean?
There's no at-will employment anywhere. It's just people just trying to be funny. When you get into an employee, when you get into a contract with someone, it is no longer one person's will. It is both parties. There's what we call in law consensus addendum. Parties must be in agreement. They must be of the same mind. So it means if they're no longer of the same mind, they have to untangle. One person cannot just untangle. The other person will still be there. So you have to go back, talk to them, and disentangle yourself well in accordance with the rules. So there's nothing like at-will, because if you begin to do at-will, that means nobody will be subject to any regulation anymore. We will just wake up and say, this is my will, I'm no longer ready, and then, you know, that's it. So you have employers who usually wield the power, now say we can fire you without notice. No, you can't fire, but you must give notice, because how else is a person supposed to be aware that he's been fired or his appointment has been terminated? It is by giving notice to the person, saying, oh, for whatever reason, your services are no longer required. And now we have the law that says you must give a reason. Not that, oh, your services are no longer required. Why? What happened to me? Is it that I've not been functioning well? Or is it that the company cannot continue to cope with me? Just let me know the reason why. And truly, I find sense in this position, because it helps the employee to understand what he needs to fix about himself going forward. If it's the problem, do you get? So, okay, I've seen offices that will say, oh, it's not because of your performance. It's not because you're not doing well. But currently, we are unable to cope with the size of our operations. Finances are not running as usual, and we do not want to owe. So we are letting staff go. If at all things changes in future, we'll put a call across to you. Perfect. The employee knows that leaving is not because he's a bad person, but because there are some certain things that led to it. He's able to now project how to move forward. If the employee was caught stealing from the company, let him know so that everything is clear and is not muddled up. So we are at a level where the NICN is now beginning to help us put sanity into our system. I must tell you too that the NICN does not just support employees alone, because a lot of employers always think that way. No. I remember I was in court when a former bank manager sued a bank that he had worked with to get maybe 3 months' salary that was supposed to be paid and wasn't paid. Truly, the bank did not pay him that particular sum, which ordinarily should have been his exit benefit. But if I were the lawyer to that particular man, I would have advised him not to even venture into that particular issue, because he ended up coming out with the 33 million naira debt against him, while the bank that he had sued was declared clean. Why? Because while this person was a manager, he was disbursing loans recklessly, some for his own benefits, using fronts, you know, mismanaging accounts, funds were missing that he could not account for. And funny thing, the bank did not even request all of these things in return. The bank just said, you know what, your appointment is terminated, go home. But somehow he just felt within himself that, no, I have rights. And he said to proceed to court. And the court told him that, no, where your rights starts is where someone else's hands. Where someone else's rights end is where yours starts from. So everything is balanced. And when the books were opened, his own side of the story could not stand the side of the bank. Do you get my point? So he went home, not with 3 months' paycheck he was expecting, but with a 33 million naira debt that ordinarily the bank had to revive because he was proving stubborn. So it's just a way to let everyone know that it's a two-way side. If you abide by terms, you'll be fine. If you don't, parties may take actions that may lead into even unintended consequences.
One thing I think we should pick from here is, let's talk about disciplinary committee. When you want to discipline somebody for misconduct in the workplace, what does the law provide for this? Because I've had cases of people not even giving fair hearing. They're just advised to resign, even when you can't even establish that this person has committed an offense. So what is the law's take on disciplinary actions in the workplace?
Thank you. You see, disciplinary action at the workplace is funny, because most employers also do not call in professionals to handle. For instance, I tell people, when I try to speak or enlighten people about this, I tell them, we can run for you, for instance, a whistleblowing mechanism, an employee exit mechanism that will help you ensure that you are covered. What all of this does for them is that it helps them to get information that might possibly give them leads as to what appropriate action to take. Someone will notice something or will see something, but is afraid to come in person, can provide evidence through a particular channel. Then the office, upon receipt of such evidence or complaint, can now do preliminary investigation to check, issue queries, call this person, come this person, and all of that. Then they will go through further steps to resolve it. Now, you have mentioned the primary issue. While such disciplinary measures are fraught with violations, lack of fair hearing. Most employers are in a hurry. They find the revelation, they find the discovery, and all they do is just take action without making recourse to what the laid down procedure is. So you have some people too who say, oh, you are on suspension without pay. How? How will I be on suspension without pay? If you are suspending my service, you are the one who is exercising your rights, telling me to stay home. But you will pay me as long as my employment has not been terminated. You will pay me because my time is running. I'm not leaving for that period of suspension. I'm not leaving you to go and work for somebody else. You are the one telling me to sit at home. I must feed. My needs must be taken care of. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Then you have some people who say it's partial pay. That one I heard it of recent. Partial pay. A lot of things happen and it's just funny. So they will tell them that you'll be coming to work, but they will not pay you. So who's supposed to take care of the expenses for transportation? So and by the time such staff now begin to document all of these things, it now results into a big issue that ordinarily the company might not have intended. So most times, lack of fair hearing, they're always in a haste to make a decision. They're not willing to listen to that particular person. And you know, we are judgmental in this part of the world. Once something has happened, maybe a trusted subordinate or advisor has said something, most times they just take it. They do not bother to call the offending party to say, oh, come, what is this? They confront them with the position, enable them and give them the right environment to throw in their own response. If possible, let them know that they can come in with a legal practitioner, if need be. So, you know, so that's just one area that most of them to also get to incur liabilities or, you know, breach. Oh, yeah. Then also you have, for instance, staff on the side of the employee. Some of them want to resign. Then they now start calculating leave period. No. You can't be clever by half. So they are supposed to tender 1 month or 2 months or 3 months notice, depending on what they sign. They now decide to start calculating on their own leave period. They say, I've not taken my leave for the year, no. Leave period is separate. Your work period is separate. You have to speak with your HR. And that is where dialogue and negotiation skills come in. HR, how are you doing? I'm no longer feeling the satisfaction of this work. I'm thinking of switching to another place. If you don't want to tell them, you can say, you see, I'm tired. I think I'm mentally drained. I'm burnt out. I just want to take, like, some period of break from work so that I can get myself back. So please, I'd like you to excuse me from this employment. I know I'm supposed to give a month's notice, but unfortunately, I'm not in the mental capacity to give that. What can we do? When you negotiate, then they can say, okay, fine. Oh, we are sticking with the agreement. You must pay your salary in lieu. If you can't afford to pay your salary in lieu, go and work out the 1 month and you move on. So I think that everyone should learn that. If you are not able to fully comply with your terms of exit, you should be able to seek negotiation. You don't come and impose to them. But the thing is, most times, employers overlook. They say, 1 month salary. We like because of 1 month salary, go to court. But you see, employers that like to stand on principle will go. Even if they have to spend millions to prove that point, they do it. So that, because eventually it's unfair. As much as we complain about employer, it is unfair for employees to do that to employer. Because what you do is you disrupt their operation. They are unable to plan for a replacement. The period that would be required for them to get in a new hand, train a new hand, for you to give an handover note, maybe for that person to understudy you, is not there. Then number two, it now appears that the person has wasted all of their efforts at training and all. They say, I know, some people say, no, they didn't sponsor me to any training. All the trainings I went to, I sponsored myself, good. But the practical space to actually play out all that you have learned at the training, you got it there. So it's because they allowed you grow on the job. That is why you can get to that, your level of proficiency. So the best you can do is live well. Ensure that you are leaving a space that will be well covered. So I'll believe in. Even if, for instance, you are having premonitions that you might leave, or it's looking like you might leave, you can even tell your HR, you know, unofficially, HR, I want to tell you something. There are things I'm working on. It looks like I'm angry. So I'm not sure if I want to leave yet, but those things, it's depending on those things. What do you think I should do? Would you want me to just drop later? Or how do we go about it? So most times, when employees get to see better opportunities, it does not mean that they should now denigrate where they are currently, because they are going elsewhere.
Thank you. You've touched a lot of things. There's something else that is coming to my mind. I was discussing with a colleague recently, and because my employer is keen on making those deposits to the pension and the tax, we get notification once our tax account or our pension account are credited. And my colleague was like, "How is this a lot of money? We even know whether I will retire or something like that." Well, I don't mention that there are some workplaces that deduct these things from your salary and it doesn't go to any account. Your pension fund is not credited, your tax is not paid, and you're just there. So I want you to address that. What does the law say about it, and why do companies validate this? Like, literally validate it. You don't even have a pension account to start with.
Okay, so the thing is, like I said, anyhowness is a thing in Nigeria. People just thrive on doing things without account, and it thrives because people keep quiet a lot, you know. And maybe in recent times, we are beginning to see pushbacks with Gen Zs coming on board. You know, some people will resume three days, and even they are not feeling the environment. Some of them don't even tell them, "I'm not coming in." You know, they just stop work and all of that. So employers are now beginning to see that there's a need to balance, you know. It's like the previous generations who used to tolerate these things are no longer there. And they're now beginning to see what they can do. But really, employers are obliged under the law to retire pension, taxes, and most importantly also to also cater for the health of their staff by helping them register HMO. There are HMOs that are private, the HMOs that public rendered, maybe in public hospitals or public medical initiative by the government. So employers can also ensure they do that. Okay, if you're not even going to do that, when your employees are not, you know, feeling fine, what do you do? Do you support them? They say you're not feeling fine, so what do we now do? Okay, just let me know what it will cost you at the hospital. I'll pay part of it. That's an incentive, even if you can stand of what maybe the big firms or what the general expectation is out there. While I was serving as a youth co in Enugu with the Ministry of Justice, I was placed under the care of a particular lawyer there. And her name is Miss Poluka Agbola, so it's very verifiable. Now she's married. At that point in time, I fell ill at a point, and I went to the hospital and all of that. Ordinarily, maybe my employer, who at that time was the Minister of Justice, ought to take care of me. But because nobody would have known me at that point in time, I was just a youth copper or youth corps member. And the moment she heard I wasn't, she sent me money for all the tests I was to run, medication and everything. She gave me like 2 days off work. That is an initiative. There is no way I will look back, and when I have to talk about her, I will say she's a wicked person or some woman. So a lot of employers, the only thing that makes them look antagonistic to their staff is where the line of welfare begins to get blurry. Once staff are happy, they see that you are trying your best for them, even if it is not 100%. Some of them can continue to work. So pension, taxes, HMOs, they are things that the law puts across to employers to see that they do. Unfortunately, if people sign contracts that do not cover those things, the law cannot start holding the employers to say, "Okay, come and do it by force." Come and do it by force. Because the employer will say, "We signed an agreement that derogated from all of those things because already we discussed and we understood the issues surrounding why we might not be able to provide them." But I will urge employers particularly to do so. Tax is compulsory. Tax is compulsory. The employee might decide to elect not to pursue pension, provisions, or HMO in the agreement. That's their problem. But tax is compulsory because tax has to be paid from the salary. Now, on the part of the employees, as you have mentioned, employers place some ridiculous expectations in the name of non-compete clauses, NDAs. Most times I just laugh because by our laws, most of those agreements or those clauses are not binding. They have no legal possibility. If someone has worked for you, they've left your place of employment, why are you so concerned about where they are going to work next? Some will say you will not work in this industry for the next 2-5 years. How will they survive? What if that industry is all they have known all their life? They came from somewhere to work with you. If there were such restrictions in the first place, why would they come to you? That's anti-competition. If you want to retain the best talent, you do well and retain them. You convince them to stay with you. The moment they decide to leave, you don't start reminding them of one non-compete clause that is meant to hold them down or set them back. Some will even tell you, you are not to accept any employment within a 30-kilometer radius of your former place of employment or any of their branches. So if they have branches all over Lagos, what am I supposed to do? Do I have to go to Kutuwenji or travel abroad before I can now live my life? Some of those terms are grossly, you know, unreasonable. And the moment the court sees that this thing is unreasonable, the court will strike it down. It can't stand.
Even if the employee
NDAs,
agree to it on resumption.
Yes, now, there are a number of things that cannot stand. Have you not seen employers telling employees to sign contracts that they will not take them to court? Yes, when they go to court, the court will accept their cases open-heartedly. Why? Because under the law, you cannot oust the jurisdiction of the court. You cannot tell the court, no, we'll not call you, stay there. Even religious organizations that always tend to tell the court that, no, we are governed by God, we want to stand alone, they don't. The moment the court is invited, the court is like what you call an apropos. You start sniffing his nose into your business. If you don't want the court to sniff his nose into your business, that means you have to solve the issues. You get, if you cannot solve your issues and the court is invited by any of the parties, the court will stay. The court will get a chair, sit down very well. The only time the court would leave is when both parties now say, you know what, we are ready to let go. Then the court can now move because already nothing concerns the court again. But as long as one party has invited the court will stay put. So for non-compete clauses, they don't make sense. They are ridiculous. It stifles competition. It stifles innovation. It stifles growth. If I'm trying to pitch an advice to you or an innovation to you in this my current company, and you're not listening to me, why should I stay? Why can't I go out and float my own idea that can birth the next miracle for that industry? Why must I stay with you? Why must you now tell me I cannot walk around 30 kilometers radius of where you are or where you have any of your subsidiaries or your branches? You want to drive me into the forest where I would not be able to have access to the things that would make me birth the dream innovation that can make the country or society better? So there are so many reasons why the court will not even grant it, because it's a waste of time. You are just being selfish, trying to protect your own interest against the interest of this particular person who ordinarily has devoted time, resources, and their person to work for you. Then you have the issue of non-disclosure agreements, blah, blah, blah. Fine, that's good. As we all have a fiduciary duty and a duty of confidence to people that we relate with. On this call, if you tell me things that are personal to you, common sense and reason says that I should not be able to tell anybody without your consent. It's a law. It's a natural law that is just there. So if I've worked with my employer, I'm expected not to leak their secrets or do anything that is unethical that would injure them. But it doesn't mean that I would not be able to go out and tell people about my experience. If you have battered me, you've beaten me blue-black, you've shown me pepper and you've shown me shaggy, I should be able to tell the world my experience. Don't come and be telling me you have an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, that you cannot disclose anything about what. No, I cannot disclose things that are personal or owned by the company. My experience is owned by me, me alone. There's a reason why abroad, when people have all of these kind of disputes, burden on these issues, they do settlement out of court. Because those companies know that they don't want their debt lineage to be in the public. So they just say, come. So what do? How do we settle you? Okay, sorry, don't be angry. We didn't know. Okay, just take this amount and just use it to just... It's not as if we are bribing you. It's just for you to just forgive us. We are not saying we are guilty, but, you know, let's just settle this issue. We don't need this controversy. So reputation means a lot there. But here in Nigeria, you're not willing to compensate for the wrong you have done to someone. And you just start saying you're under non-disclosure agreement. No, it's not absolute. Even the court itself would not allow for such absolutism. Because what it does is that it kills the innovative drive of our environment. So that means when people leave, they can't see anything. So how do we learn from the experience of people? So all of these experiences that we hear about toxic environments, me too, me this, me that, horrible bosses, how do we get to here and, you know, ensure that our lawmakers, our policymakers now begin to, you know, pick up ideas that will help them shaping our policy framework or laws to birth a better working environment for us. So it's unconscionable to do that. You don't beat a child and tell the child how to cry. So you beat a child mercilessly. Once you are done to your fill, the child now starts crying. And now starts saying, no, don't cry now. You can't cry that way. That's not right. If a child, the child decides to listen to you, good for you. If the child refuses to listen to you, you are damned. You have to bear with the uncomfortable experience of the noise that will be coming out of the pipe and the mouth organs of that child. So that's it.
Yes, thank you very much, Damnala, for the vivid explanations that you've given to this. And I think a good way to end this conversation is, you know, a lot of things you've said has pointed out the rights of each stakeholders in a company or at a workplace. But based on what we've come to know, following up with the law, trying to get compensations for some ways that you've been hurt in Nigeria is a long process that is not even worth pursuing. But you've mentioned here that the industrial court is very responsive, right? So I want you to give us a step-by-step process on how an aggrieved or a disgruntled employee or employer can pursue some certain cases in the industrial court. What can they do? What are the expectations? Just a way to tell people that are listening that if you feel you've been wronged and your rights have been trespassed against, this is how you can pursue compensation in the court of law.
Okay. So the first thing is to open up your mind to what the possibilities are. Assess the situation to determine if there is a conflict, if there is a breach, if there is a dispute. You know, sometimes some disputes can be perceived. Some might be actual. Some might not even exist. So you just have to open up your mind to assess it, you know, with all level of neutrality to see what the issues are. Are they coming from your side or the other person's side? Once you identify it, the next is to negotiate. Inform the other party, either in writing or orally, whatever the person decides to do, text messages, mails, whatever. Once you inform the person and they refuse to work on those things or remedy, the next thing is to put up maybe repeated engagements, maybe to that same person or to the appropriate channel provided in that setting or office environment. It will also be a good time to also start lapping up evidence, because if they fire you, they log you out of their system, you might not be able to get anything. So you start lapping up your evidence, write letters, do all of that, find ways you can get your evidence ready. The moment you do that and they refuse to listen to you, reach out to a lawyer. Most people will complain and say, oh, the service of a lawyer might be too expensive for me. Most times they are wrong. There are a number of ways lawyers charge people depending on the circumstances. In fact, we have what we call contingency. Sometimes it's a kind of payment structured based on the success of the case. So they only charge you for the initial payments, they charge you for filing fees, traveling to court, then maybe some level of advance, you know, at least for compensation of the effort of the lawyer. Then the lawyer can now agree with you on what would be adequate compensation in the event that the case succeeds. So that is undoubtedly a very good way out for a lot of people, which they do not usually take into cognizance. Then on the other side, once the lawyer now writes to them, which would be the first step, they write to them to say, oh, what is the way forward? This is what our client has reported to us. What do you want to do about it? If they now refuse to say what they think might be a positive way to resolve the dispute, then parties can now go to court. When they go to court and everyone files their processes, then the court would now decide one way or the other who is right, who is not right. The amazing thing about the National Industrial Court is, for now, you are not allowed to appeal. Once the National Industrial Court reaches a decision, it's final. Everybody goes with whatever they get. But now there's a right that can be exercised to appeal to the Court of Appeal, which is the final bus stop. So it's not as if the ladder is long like that too. For employment cases, it's usually a shorter route than maybe your regular cases that you have in other courts. Maybe with the exception of magistrate court, which has courts of summary jurisdiction. It's just as good as following the process. But I always tell people, once you see that there's a dispute, if possible, enroll the service of a lawyer to guide you from the beginning to the end. Some people would have missed certain steps. When the issues now become critical or they are struggling to reconcile it, that's when they now reach out to a lawyer. Meanwhile, certain opportunities or windows to consolidate on that particular person's claim would have gone, lapsed, or become unidentifiable. That's just it.
Thank you. And I believe that all these pointers you've given out has opened the mind of people to the possibilities of having more saner, like a saner workplace that's working in the tech space. I think the people working in that space, both the employers and the employees, is a different world from what is applicable in the other world. So I think we should just end with that. Are there exemptions for the tech space? I understand that tech companies or tech startups do not really have any issue with minimum minimum wage, because most of them are basically paying beyond above the minimum wage. But it doesn't end at that. So is it that the tech startup workplace scenarios are different from what is applicable in the outside world, or everybody should bring themselves under the same umbrella and act rightly?
The reality is that everyone is governed under the same structure. The tech space is just like a privileged rich kid. You know, you have lots more money to go into the supermarket to get or pick anything you want off the shelf. That's just all. That's the only difference. It doesn't change from the fact that they are also riddled with some of these issues that we have. And some of the issues that arise from the workplace, like I have said, have to do with poor welfare culture, ego problems, which also can be seen in the tech space. Funny enough, when someone in the tech space is complaining about poor welfare, they're not talking about the normal welfare, you know, you see in the regular world. You hear them saying, they were supposed to exercise a share option for me. They refused to do that. For all of the work I've done, they were supposed to give me this bonus over the sales commission, over these, you know, poshed way of saying things, over, you know, huge claims and all of that. But when we had it up, it's still almost the same thing with what the people in the regular world face. So there is nothing insulating anyone. And as we have seen recently, the tech world is, as much as it looks like a favorable space in terms of remuneration, can also be a very, very abusive space. So there is no one that is above the law. Everyone is under the jurisdiction of the Nigerian legal standard. But it's just that the operations, the flexible workings of the operations of the industry might differ and might allow that certain things be done in a unique way, different from the regular way it has been done elsewhere.
Thank you very much, Damilola. I've enjoyed this conversation so much.
I appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me once again.